Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of March 4th. I'm John Gibson. I'm here in Tokyo, and quite honestly, with me in Arizona was Jim Allen. He was in Surprise, Arizona. No, he was in Phoenix, Arizona, but we had some technical difficulties. We recorded a great podcast, but we lost it, and Jim had to get some sleep, so I'm going solo today. Apologies. Jim, hopefully your computer and everything gets worked out and we'll be able to record next time, which is going to be in a couple of weeks from now. But anyway, on this week's show, we've got a couple of chats, one with former Hiroshima Carp reliever Jay Jackson, who's now with the Milwaukee Brewers, and former Yakult Swallows closer Tony Barnett, now with the storied Chicago Cubs franchise after a couple seasons with the Texas Rangers. I'm going to hit on my version of the possible rule changes that might impact MPB, and I'm going to look at a few of what the media is calling our top rookies coming up for this season. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so Jim is in Arizona. He's there on business. He was able to get some comments and quotes from a couple guys we know well. One, Jay Jackson, who pitched very well for the Hiroshima Carp for three seasons. And Tony Barnett, who spent 2010 to 2015 with the Yakult Swallows. Two guys we really enjoyed talking to over the years. They really were very gracious with their time. They were thoughtful with their comments, and we really appreciated it. And Jim, first we're going to hear from his chat with Jay Jackson, and basically Jay had a lot of time. They talked. Jim was doing some other stories, so they talked. They did some interviews for those stories, and then at the end did a podcast chat. And then with Tony, I think he wasn't sure how much time they had, and he says they were kind of frantic and that they were kind of rushed. I didn't see a problem with it. I thought it was a good pace. I thought the subject matter was cool, and we really appreciate him doing both of these interviews, so let's take a listen.
Okay, our guest this week on the podcast is Milwaukee Brewers, Jay Jackson. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thanks, Joe. It's good to be here once again.
Yeah, it is good to be here. It's be here in Phoenix once again.
Yeah, it's definitely a little warmer out here now.
Yeah, it's like it's a little different from Nichinan.
No, for sure. It's definitely a little different. At least got a little late starter. Got to relax a little bit longer this year, yeah. But it was fun.
Yeah, I love Nichinan, you know, although I'm kind of sad because I think they ruined a good outhouse to make that stadium.
It could definitely be a lot better. I think the team's going to try to put some money into it to hopefully get it better and do some more things to it. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, well, you got a lot of things to look forward to. First of all, just give us the fans in Japan a little update on where you are right now. A short update. Okay, we just talked for about an hour, so
Short update. I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, Maryville to be exact. Big league camp with the Milwaukee Brewers, competing for a spot in the bullpen to, you know, help this team win a World Series. They were one game away from last year of getting to the World Series. Hopefully I can help them get there and win one.
Okay, and we talked a lot about this and that and a lot of good stuff, but what are your, obviously you're still really connected with Japan,
yes.
But what are some of the things that Japan brought to you or you were able to take out of Japan? Swag, personal swag.
A little personal swag, but I got to be myself, so being confident in myself a lot more now. Being able to just enjoy being myself and knowing what I have to do and being ready to go out there and enjoying the moments and not worrying about everything else and thinking too much, just going out there and being accepted for who I am. Like, the Japanese fans accepted me for who I was and kind of made me grow up and just kind of be myself a little bit.
Okay, well, that begs the question, how again, the before and after. Were you a little less like that when you, in maybe the last couple of years before you left?
Oh, for sure. You kind of get, you know, they try to make baseball players into one lump category, especially. You want to fit in, but not fit in too much or do too much to stand out here. But the culture and stuff here is advancing a little bit. And just like I said, like going to different cultures, I've had the pleasure to go to different ones, different countries to play. And, you know, they accept you for who you are because they don't know you. Like, you know, they kind of here, they kind of grow you and hone you to be who they kind of want you to be and this, that, and the other. But over there, you get to be yourself and it's a little freer. And I got to do that. And I come back and that's all I can be is be myself. And that's all I want to do is be myself. And, you know, me being comfortable and confident in that, I feel like lets everybody else kind of be comfortable and confident in themselves too. And, you know, hopefully that helps them play their best baseball.
Okay, let me ask, does the financial security play any role in that, knowing that if something goes wrong today, you're not going to be in the minors next week?
No, like the financial, I mean, baseball for me, playing baseball is playing for the love of the game, regardless of where I'm at. I could play anywhere for any amount of money, any time, and that's the big thing to me, is just being able to play baseball. You get paid. I mean, I played in the minors for 7 years and was getting paid almost nothing. And it's just, you play for the love of the game. You don't play for anything else. Financial security, you know, even still, if you're in the big leagues, it's not really true financial security until you get 5-6 years in and you get those multi-million dollar contracts. So you play just to play and enjoy the moments and have fun, because a lot of people don't get to do this.
Fair enough. I want to talk a little bit about throwing the pitches, because you talked about using your two-seamer and your changeup and how the batters in Japan changed your pitch selection.
Yeah.
So what was the transition? Obviously, that's something you made a decision. Okay, I better lay off that two-seamer and changeup, because what was that?
It's just a matter of, you know, each hitter makes you adjust your pitch sequence regardless. But, you know, you see a lot of hitters over there. Again, they're not big power hitters. They're not trying to do as much damage as guys over here. So you can get away with two seamers a little bit more. A good two seamer here, a good two seamer there, a good changeup here. Where those guys over there, they like to play a lot of small ball. Where a good two seamer gets the base hit to get a guy on first, so they can try to steal second, so they can try to bunt him over, et cetera, just to play small ball that way. So,
okay. Having said that, who are the guys you threw two seamers and changeups to in Japan?
Mostly lefties, a lot of lefties, and then some of them, I threw a few to Tutugo, and, you know, I threw him a lot more four-seamers up and in.
Okay.
He was a four-seamer up and in guy, much less sliders down and in.
Okay.
He would get to the sliders down and in because he would sit on them a little bit, but two-seamers and change-ups to him was pretty good. Just because I mixed it in well enough to keep him off balance. Third baseman from DNA, Miyazaki. I threw him a lot of righty-righty changes because it came out as a fastball. He's a good fastball hitter, so it got him out front a little bit, where he rolled over a lot of changeups later my last couple of years there.
Okay. Well, now you can divulge that stuff because nobody's going to remember a year from now.
I hope not. We'll see. Hopefully, if I have to go face them again, they don't remember this.
Okay. Well, your secret, we don't have 10,000 followers, so your secret's probably safe.
Oh, you're good.
Your time's running low, but again, want to thank you very much for being with us. Thank you so much for joining us, and best wishes.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. One of our guests this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is an old friend of the podcast, Tony Barnett of the Chicago Cubs. How's it going, man?
Hey, Jim. It's good to see you guys, man. It's weird to see you guys in the States.
It is very weird. It's weird to be here, but the Cubs were very helpful, and you guys are. We appreciate the time you took. Now, tell us. You made your major league debut with the Rangers, and you went through the Rangers. And it seems like once you went to the Rangers, everybody from Japan wants to go and play for the Rangers. It's like a train.
I don't know if it's that. It might just be like their scouting is, you know, different organizations have different ideologies and, you know, different goals in mind. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, Josh Boyd was the guy that initially, like, he was the one with the Rangers that really kind of hammered, you know, and really wanted to get me there, and he did. So I think, I just think, you know, it depends on the team and their presence, and obviously I think Texas has a huge presence over in Japan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're sort of like NPB's farm team now, because everybody, it seems like they're going to guys and saying, hey, if you're not where you want to be right now, Japan will help you get there.
Oh, I mean, working relationships are always nice, and I mean, started with Colby.
Right.
You know, you think back to Colby Lewis, and I mean, you know, when things work out, you know, especially when you know, from my perspective, it seems like with a Japanese team, you know, when there's trust involved, it makes decisions a little bit easier. You know, if you're going from an organization where, if, you know, guys are freely coming back and forth and things keep working out, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Okay. So what were some of the obstacles you overcame, or some of the adjustments you wanted to make but couldn't make when you came to the Cubs, or when you came to the Rangers first from Japan?
No, I mean, it really wasn't that much of a seamless. It was a fairly seamless transition. I mean, it was, at the end of the day, it wasn't, it was still baseball. You know, I still had to, go out there and compete, and, that never changed.
Right.
The hitters in the box changed, the mentalities there changed, and I had to learn a few things along the way. But, I mean, in hindsight, I can't really pinpoint one thing that said, oh, man, I got to do this as opposed to doing this. Different, just adjusting to the lifestyle, adjusting to the travel, adjusting to the amount of games, the volume of games.
Okay.
Just the scheduling, things of that nature, just the differences on, away from the field. And
you got a different, you're missing that subclass of hitters here, the guys who slap the ball to the
opposites. Yeah, but I mean, it's still finding guys' weaknesses and, exposing those. So, but again, in Japan, you had to learn to try to get guys to swing and miss. And, if you can do that, it plays anywhere.
Sure. Sure. Now, I know, of course, what we all noticed is that when you started with the Rangers, you kept your your little leg kick there.
Right. I mean, it's not just a, vanity piece.
Right.
That's not just, something I do to,
I understood.
It's part of who I am. It's part of, what makes me be able to do what I do. So,
right.
Those are my mechanics. And,
right.
It's nothing that I was just like, oh, now that I'm back in America, let's go back to the old, pitching of what I was taught when I was younger. That's not the case. It's, you go with what makes you successful and you stick with it and make adjustments from there.
So in one sense, it became kind of like a Japanese pitcher in Japan.
Yeah, I mean, it's a joke, but, and you look around, I'm not the only one doing it. I'm not the only guy doing that, and you see more and more guys doing it now. You look around, I think more and more guys are going to do it. You see more hitches, you see more pauses, and, it worked for me, and the guys that also have done it, it's worked for them.
Oh, they'd stop doing it.
Right, I mean, Cueto's probably the biggest, he does these things out there that, are different, and it plays.
Okay. Well, tell me about coming to the Cubs this year, your expectations for yourself now that you've been back, and you're no longer the new old guy in MLB.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, I'm in a spot where I'm coming off injury.
Right.
So, for me to have to prove myself at this stage, that's where I'm at. I've got to prove myself. I've got to prove that, one, I'm healthy, which, I'm on the great track for that. Everything's trending upwards in that department. I've been throwing well. Velocities, regaining velocity, all those things, all those boxes are getting checked off. And, for me now, it's just going out there and proving that I can still get the outs in the games and, making sure that, the bounce back, the recovery's there, and just making sure that I can still compete at the highest level around.
Oh, great stuff. Okay, well, all I can do is wish you continued success.
Well, and thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for joining me back in America.
We'll get around to it. We'll get you before you're done. Your meter is not over yet.
No, I still got more in the tank.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. And to both Jay and Tony, thank you very much. For me, I guess with Jay, I think the tone of his talk is what stayed with me afterward. He sounds like a guy who's real confident that the things he did and learned here in Japan they're gonna play over there fairly well in the States. And it was after this chat, it came to me right away that we've seen some pitchers in recent years go over after pitching here and go to the States and have some really good success. I think at the top of that list is Miles Michaelis, formerly of the Yomiuri Giants. He just recently, as Jim was over there, signed a 4-year extension with the Cards, with the St. Louis Cardinals, worth $68 million. And boy, that's huge. I remember Ryan Vogelsong. Vogelsong worked really well when he went back over with the San Francisco Giants and earned a second contract and had a really good stint over there. But man, oh man, Miles Michaelis was really fantastic for that team last year, and signs a 4-year extension. So that's huge. That just shows that, and Miles talked about it before he left Japan. In fact, the whole time he was here, talked about the fact that he was here to get better. And you hear a lot of pitchers, especially young guys. I think one guy in particular, Nick Martinez with the Nippon Ham Fighters, is one of the guys recently who said, hey, look, I'm here, but I'm looking to get back. I'm looking to prove myself and then get back to the States and pitch in the majors. So these guys come here with a goal to improve, and obviously Miles did that, and I think Jay thinks that he has learned enough that he can go back and compete in the major leagues. And you know, when you hear him say the Milwaukee Brewers were one game away from the World Series, and he hopes to be out there to help them contribute to them and get them to the World Series, and not just get there but win it. It just shows you the confidence I think you get when you are able to produce and be effective in a place like Japan on a big stage, and then you learn. We always hear these players talk about how they're trying to get better, trying to do better for themselves, improve each day. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse, and all the other cliches and all the set phrases we have, but it's true. These guys are trying to get better, and you hear Jay, I think one of the things that also stayed with me is that at the end of that talk, you hear him explaining and pointing to essentially what pitches he would throw to certain hitters. I hope you can appreciate the insight you get from him telling us that, because you know, you've got batters who have particular hot zones and cold zones, and you know, we see the heat maps, and basically they come out with a book every year, and you see where the locations that guys don't have a high batting average and whatever. Well, it's one thing to know that, and it's another thing to execute pitches in a game situation, in a count situation, when you need to. And I think we get a sense of that. You know, whatever Jay has learned, he's going to have to learn the hitters over there as well, and he's going to have to make some adjustments. But, you know, executing those pitches in those certain situations and certain counts and everything, I think it's going to be interesting to watch, and we wish him luck. And yeah, I really enjoyed listening to him talk. As far as what Tony was talking about, and it's too bad because Jim and I had a nice conversation about this when we talked on the podcast that is now going to be shelved in the Lost Episodes file. Tony essentially raked him over the coals a little bit for asking him the question about his leg kick and his delivery. And obviously, you've got guys who develop a certain thing or make some adjustments or change something. And I love Tony just stopping and saying, hey, look, this is in my mechanics. This is how I pitch. This is who I am. And I think sometimes we get lost as people who are observers, whether you're a fan, whether you're in the media, whether you're around the team a lot and you just see the guys every day, that you come to reach some expectations, and you see those expectations and you want to see them play out during games the way that you're used to seeing them, but they don't always come that way. And with Tony, I think the leg kick that he had in Japan, and he still uses now, I don't know when he started doing it. I don't know if he started doing it before he came to Japan. I don't know. But I just know that, you know, it has made him who he is. And so I wouldn't expect him to change. So I found the question very interesting. And in the first episode of this episode, Jim kind of explained that, you know, he was basically asking him about his mechanics. And Jim and I go about this in different ways. I prepare a lot of questions normally before I go into the interviews with the guys. And even if I don't know who I'm going to interview, I have questions that, you know, I've lined up that I can bring in and talk to certain guys. And as I've said on the show many times, I try to get with the person before and maybe during their stretch and say, do you have 5 minutes or 10 minutes to talk? And if they say yes, then I start to develop more questions that are guided toward them. But Jim, a lot of times, just goes off the cuff, and he's very familiar with some of the guys, and he knows their numbers really well. And so he can ask the questions like that. And I think he just asked a question with a lot of assumptions, and maybe Tony, I don't know if he took offense to it or not. I know Tony fairly well, and I think he just wanted to straighten him out and say, hey, look, it's not all about what you saw before or what you've seen in the past. It's, you know, this is what I do. This is who I am. And, you know, don't forget about it and get used to it and things like that. So that was fun. It was fun. It was just really fun to hear Tony's voice. And Jim did say in the, and I'm going to be referring to this all day long in this podcast here, in this re-recording of it, is that Jim said, well, the two guys were really just happy to see each other, and they were excited to see each other. And you can hear it when Tony says, it's weird to see you guys over here. And he asked Jim, if Tony asked Jim if I was along with him in Arizona, and Jim, I suppose he laughed first and said no. Yeah, I think they're just used to seeing most of these guys who have talked to us through the years. They're just used to seeing a lot of us either together at the park or, they just assume that we're connected some way. If one isn't there, if one's there, then the other one must be there somewhere. So that's not how it works. But I wish I could have been there, but I did get to go to camp this year, so I shouldn't complain too much. But Jim had some interesting comments. It's too bad they didn't. We had technical difficulties and weren't able to present that to you this time, but maybe he'll, in the future, maybe he'll do a blog about it. But I, since he lost the entire file, I don't think he remembers what he said. It was pretty late over there, and Jim did talk about the fact that he is jet lagged. He went over there and he basically works a different kind of schedule than I do. Not that it would be easier for me to go over to Arizona and work from 6 a.m. to whatever it is at night that he's doing, but when you're sleepy and you're trying to function and do interviews and write stories and you have commitments that you can't take a nap and you're trying to get over the jet, like, it's very difficult. I know I usually have a little bit of trouble adjusting right away those first couple of days, but anyway, Jim was pretty tired, so I didn't make him stay up late into the night to re-record another show. But thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate the work you did over there to get the interviews. I hope you guys really enjoy it. And obviously, we enjoy talking to JJ and Tony. And look, if you guys end up coming back to NPV, hopefully we can have a video podcast by then. And you guys won't mind being on the new and improved JBW, huh? All right. So, one thing before I get to this rule thing, I did want to talk about what the media tells us are basically the top rookies each year, and they follow them so closely and watch their every move, and this happens every year, and basically sometimes there's one. Last year was Kotaro Kiyomiya of the Nippon Ham Fighters, and everything he did, and whether it was on the top team, whether it was on the farm team, they were telling us that he was going to be the next big star, and he probably is, but I mean, I don't want them to tell me that without the kid doing anything. So we get to see each year a lot of rookies who gather a lot of attention, even though there are some other rookies out there. And of course, when they're not paying attention, they say the rookie's coming out of nowhere. And I'm like, the guy was there all along. You focused on someone else and you just didn't notice. Don't say he came out of nowhere. But anyway, the media is having trouble picking out that one super rookie. So what the media have done is split it into basically quarters, and they found four guys whom they think are really going to be able to contribute on the top teams of their respected franchises. So number one, I think, in their ranking is Kosei Yoshida, a right-handed pitcher who's out of high school. He's with the Fighters. And he looks like a good pitcher. I don't know. We'll have to see. And then the second is Kaito Kozono of Hiroshima. And he's an infielder, I think primarily a shortstop. And he really looks like a really elite defensive player. And that's going to be good. It's just that'll be good for the Carp in the future. But it's just a matter of how much he can hit, I think, is going to be his issue. Next is Akira Neo of the Chunichi Dragons, and he's an infielder who has spent the entire camp portion of his first year here with the farm team. However, that hasn't stopped the media from, you know, gluing cameras on his every move so far. So we get to see a lot of him. He's getting a lot of headlines, a lot of TV time. But he had a right calf tear, a muscle tear in his calf, and so he's getting over that. I think Jim said he also had an elbow issue before that, sometime before that. So he's not even on the first team, and he's gathering a lot of attention. Hopefully, honestly, I would like to see him do well, but I don't even know if he's going to get that much time. But the Dragons do need a second baseman. Their second baseman didn't do what they the second baseman of the day sometimes last year in terms of who was out there and what they were looking for. And, they even had Shuhei Takahashi playing that position at times out there. And we know he's not a great defensive player anywhere, but I certainly wouldn't put him at second base. Not if I were trying to win. If I was trying to win games, so hopefully, like I said, Neil will do well. But we don't know. He's got to get some top team time first of all, and get healthy and all that stuff. And the fourth player is Kyota Fujiwara of the Lotte Marines, and probably of these four, he's my favorite, my personal favorite. I really think he's ready. He swings. I haven't seen a high school player move like him and swing like him in a very long time. Let's put it that way. I won't bring up any comps, basically, but it's been a long time since I've seen a guy like that. I think he reminds me a little bit of the guy whose swings he's probably going to be stealing at the first team level if he gets to stay on the first team, and that's Kazuya Fukuda. Now, the swings are different. The swings are very different, but they're both left-handed hitters, and he has a really nice finish to his swing, and he's really smooth. It's hard to believe this kid is out of high school. I heard one of the radio announcers saying the same thing. You don't see guys who have been out of college a couple years swing like this, and this guy's already swinging. Just has a beautiful finish, a beautiful swing, a beautiful swing path. And you don't see guys with a swing like that who've been pros for a while. So he's my personal favorite. I don't know what they're going to do with him. I saw him playing center field the other day in a preseason game. Now, he made a throw and threw a runner out at third. Now, I can't remember if it came on a hit or if the runner was just trying to advance on a fly ball or what it was. I think it was a hit. Anyway, the distance wasn't that far. He one-hopped the third baseman. Suffice to say, it wasn't the greatest throw. He did get the outfield assist, so count it for what it was, but I don't think it was a great throw. I want to see him throw the ball with a little bit more air under and see him do it consistently before I make a judgment on the arm. But from that particular throw, I would say it's not that great an arm, but he did get the runner out, so a lot of factors that go into that. But anyway, we'll see how he does defensively. But if they have a center fielder who can catch enough balls to be average and then actually hit, that's a big difference. That's a big boost in Chiba, because that hasn't been the case in a while. They've had some guys who have been good with the glove, really great with the glove, and sometimes elite with the glove, but the bat has been, leaving a lot to be desired. In terms of Yoshida, he's a young pitcher, so I think he's got talent on the mound, but I've seen the Fighters hit and miss with some of their talent, some of the pitching talent that they drafted with their first pick. So I'm not sure. I don't want to make any assumptions on the guy. He doesn't throw blazing, but he throws hard enough. I think he's going to be good at some point. I'm just not sure he's ready to pitch at the first team level right away. He might meet one of those guys who just needs some time before he gets his man body, gets a little bit more meat on his bones, and then fills out that frame a little bit and then becomes a better pitcher. But he might be useful. They might go ahead and put him out there. We'll have to see. I'm not sure. I can't get a read for that right now. Again, they started their camp in Arizona, so it's really hard for anybody to get a really good read. But once these games, we get to see him in real game action. And I say these are fake games during the spring, so I don't know how close to real it is. But for him, I think it'll be real since he's so young. I think he's going to be out there going as hard as he can at full strength. So we'll see how that goes. Kozono is a guy who already looks like an elite defender. And the problem with that is he plays on a team with the Carp that for middle infielders, there's just no room for him to play. I would start him on the farm regardless. And he looks like a guy whose the bat is going to come along way slower or way after the defense. He's already a top team player defensively. I don't know when he's going to be a top team player offensively, but he had a double yesterday, and this I'm taping this. I say weird because I'm used to saying this. I'm taping this on Sunday afternoon, and on Saturday he had a double off the wall, basically, in the game. And he looks okay with the bat, but I think I would start him on the farm team, let him get used to it. And then if they have some spots, they do have some spots. I think maybe a little bit of third base, maybe some outfield. There might be some places for him to get a couple swings here and there. But I think mostly, especially because he's out of high school too, I would just put him on the farm and get him used to the grind and just play him a lot and play him at short. I think Kosuke Tanaka at shortstop, probably I think more of him than Jim does. I actually, Jim in our original recording said that Kosuke Tanaka is maybe falling off a little bit, maybe didn't have as good a season as he has had in the past. And to be honest, I really think he hasn't fallen off at all. If not getting better, he's better positioned. He's better at making plays. You know, he might have had more errors and he might not have gotten to as many balls as he did before in terms of number of outs. But I think that the Carp are maybe moving some of their guys around on the infield a little bit. I wouldn't call it exactly a shift, but they're moving with pitches. And I don't know. We'll have to look at that. I mean, it's the same as what I asserted before, and that was last year. I think that Yosuke Kikuchi at second base didn't have as many putouts or outs or assists or whatever, didn't get to as many balls, and Jim equated that with him being a lesser defender. And I thought, I still think to this day, I'm watching guys, and you watch where they put down that front foot when they're batting, and they're looking to go to left field. They're not trying to hit anything on the right side. And you watch that front foot, you don't see a lot of guys even trying to go back up the middle. I mean, it's really hard to get balls through the right side and through the middle on this infield. It's really good, the middle infielder guys. So up the middle is not probably where you want to go for hits if you're playing the Carp. And I think that's why maybe there are fewer balls going to those guys and they're getting fewer outs. But I don't know. I haven't done the research. I'm just going off of what I've seen with the guys who are batting and whatever. I still just don't think that anytime soon there's a spot for him at in the middle infield spot. So granted, if one of those guys gets injured and they need a middle infielder to come up and spend some time there, they might not get their job back if it's Kosuke Tanaka at shortstop. So hopefully he stays healthy, because this kid Kozono can really pick it at shortstop. I really like him as well. So, yeah, basically those four guys have been talked about or shown. They're getting a lot of media time. But there are some other guys out there. One player, I think, with the Hanshin Tigers who has been getting a lot of talk. Well, he's been getting his share, a good share, let's put it that way, of TV time and all the rest of it, is Koji Chikamoto. And you know, as of Sunday, he's batting 500 in the preseason. He had two hits on Sunday. So that's good for the Tigers. I'm looking at them defensively. I think their defense was bad in 2017. It started out poorly in 2018. I think they need to really make sure that that defense is beyond secure. I would try to get better defensive players out there, and then hopefully these offensive guys, the bats come around soon, but I wouldn't take chances on guys who are I don't know, iffy defensively. I certainly want to make sure that they can play the position competently first, and then go from there, because, I'd like to see them get that defense just straightened out. And then Seiya Kinami is another player who is a rookie. And both of these guys are 25, so they're not young. And, you know, it's either, I think in terms of prospects, these guys have to perform. But you know, they've looked good in the spring. I've seen this happen before with players who come along and they have a good spring. And they even open up with a hot maybe couple months until the pitchers in MPB find their weakness and then start to attack that more regularly and more accurately. And then suddenly the numbers fall off. So I'm not going to get excited yet, but it's good to see these guys produce. And as long as they can play defense, I think they'll get a shot with the Tigers. Some breakout players. I'm certainly hoping Louis Okoye of the Rakuten Eagles finally puts it together. He seems like this spring he's been on the verge of giving Rakuten quite an outfield with Kazuki Tanaka. And here's another guy who basically, they say coming out of nowhere, of course, but Tanaka was there before. He just had, you know, he had at-bats the previous year, and they didn't really look at him as a rookie. They were just looking at the first-year guys, and all of a sudden he comes up and hits a bunch of home runs and wins Rookie of the Year in the Pacific League. So If Okoye and Tanaka, I know Tanaka got injured the other day, just an ankle he twisted. They say they hope he'll be back in soon. I think they're going to hold him out of some of the games, and he's not going to play with Samurai of Japan. He'll be held temporarily off of that team. But obviously, you know, he's an elite player. He was really impressive last year. Switch hitter. He's got an arm. He hit for power. He stole bases. And you put him with Okoye, who hit, you know, I'm just looking for him to make harder contact and hit some more line drives. He's been hitting home runs so far in the spring, and that's good too. But I just want to see him be more consistent with, you know, making more contact, because if he makes contact, I think he's going to do some damage. So, again, with his speed, he doesn't have to do much damage. He just has to get on base, and he'd just be a menace to every pitcher and catcher out there, as well as the infielders who have to try to tag him out. So hopefully he can have a breakout year for that team. And, you know, there's a lot to watch with some of the young players, and he's still young, Okoye. So anyway, Jim had some really interesting comments that hopefully we'll get to either in one of our prediction shows or during the season. So all is not lost, even though all was lost. Making a two-seam transition, I wanted to talk about one thing that's been a hot topic in the States, and that's the pitch clock / three-batter minimum rule that could be implemented. Now, we know from history tells us that a lot of the rule changes that are made in Major League Baseball eventually become rules in NPB. So the pitch clock, I think it's probably a good thing, and it would probably save a little bit of time, but you know, it's a long time. I think more than 20 years that we've seen pitchers like Hideo Nomo, who would, you know, throw a pitch and then walk around the mound and, you know, take 20 seconds just to get back on top of the mound and get ready. And then you've got the batter settling in. It just used to be an awful, awful watch in terms of time. But, you know, anybody involved with watching NPB games knows it's a commitment of at least 3 hours when you sit down to watch a game, whether you're at the game, whether you're sitting in front of the TV, or you're just monitoring, however you're following the game, it's at least a three-hour commitment. We stretch to the four-hour range at times, and sometimes beyond. At least we know that there's a maximum of 12 innings, so we know it's going to end and when it's going to end in terms of the innings, but that can still be a mystery as to how much time it's going to take. I think we got close to 5 hours last year. I remember one game going on and on and on, way after Pro Yaku News even ended. So, I'm just, the pitch clock is something I'm in favor of. The three-batter minimum for relievers, I wasn't sure about. Jim and I disagreed a little bit on that, so I want to save that talk so when he's back another time so we can discuss it. Essentially, I think it's going to change the roster, not so much the game, because you have to have a better plan when you're going to put a pitcher out there. If he's going to face three batters, he has to be a pitcher who can get lefties and righties out, essentially, depending on situations and you know, what your opponents are. But as opposed to a guy who's a left-handed specialist or a right-handed specialist, you've got to plan for that. Especially, I also added the fact that if you have a universal DH, then it's probably okay to go with this rule, because everybody's playing the same game. But if there's no universal DH, then it's a really, really different game in the National League than it is in the American League. And plus here, you've got the same situation with the Central League and the Pacific League. So you have to bring up a pitcher who can get left-handers and right-handers out. I'm not sure that it makes the game shorter, because if you're bringing in a guy who has to face three batters and can't get those other two, the first two out, and has to face that third one, you might be looking at a longer game, because not only does he get taken out of the game after he can't get the three batters out, or doesn't get the final out of the inning because it doesn't carry over to the next inning, but there's another pitching change to take him out, so you might be lengthening the game. So I'm not sure that helps at all. We'll have to see. Anyway, I would like to discuss this when Jim is available again, so we'll have to wait for him to do that. In the meantime, let's go to fielding questions. So our question this week comes from Glenn in Tokyo, our buddy, and he says, with the Padres thinking of 300 million reasons why they had to have one guy, and this was before the signing of Bryce Harper with the Philadelphia Phillies for $330 million, so that came before that. He says, I wondered what your thoughts were on the most impactful or possibly the most pointless signing of the MPB offseason. And Glenn says, for him, the best is Onelky Garcia, whom he thinks could be the piece who pushes the Tigers back into the top three. And the worst, he thinks, is Hisayoshi Chono, who offers the Carp a doubles hitter on a team that has home run hitters. And he hashtags it high heat. So the first thing Jim said was that what's the problem with having a doubles hitter on a team that hits a bunch of home runs? Because one of my things that I've always said is you don't have to hit home runs to be a really good player or even a great player, but being an RBI is important. Scoring runs is important. And so if he's on a doubles hitter on a home run hitting team and he's ends up being an RBI, somebody who's batted in, that's not a bad thing. So that's a good point. It was just, you don't need a bunch. And I think the Giants in 2005 proved that you don't need a bunch of home run hitters because they had a bunch and they finished in last place, I believe it was that year. Either fifth or last place. So, I don't know. Jim hadn't really, what he does each year is he goes, just before the season starts, he goes and he gets all his rosters together and gets all the guys. And so that'll include all the transactions and how those players ended up where they are. So he goes through that just before the season starts. So for me, I think I wouldn't say Onelky Garcia is the best, although I put him in a group that I think is going to be very productive and very, very much a positive for their teams. But I'm not sure that he's the best. He's kind of a messy pitcher. He always has a lot of runners on base. He'll walk guys. He gives up hits here and there. He has very few clean innings. And that means he's going to be testing that Hanshin defense that failed miserably. It got better last season, but it definitely failed miserably, and he's going to put them to the test, player for player, including himself. Jim said he's not sure that, he agreed with that statement, but he thinks Garcia is going to be good, but maybe not great. And he said any player can put you over the top and make the difference. It doesn't have to be a good player who does it. And I kind of agreed with that. It just depends on times and circumstance. And but some guys can put you over the top just, from playing good defense. But they, that doesn't always show up in the statistics. So, I couldn't agree with you in terms of him being the best. But I am going to say that he's going to be positive. The most pointless, there are a couple. There are a few. There are too many. Actually, there are more than a few. There are too many to mention. But I'll mention a few. I think the Giants picking up Hiroyuki Nakajima, who's basically spent a couple years with the Oryx Buffaloes doing not much of anything, maybe some pinch hitting here. He's been forced out into the field by injuries, I think. But basically with the Giants, I don't really see. They have a lot of young infielders. They have corner guys. They don't really need him, so he might be a guy who sticks around on the top team to pinch hit a little bit. I don't really know what he's going to do. I didn't see that very much as a good pickup, but he might come into play at some point. But especially since Shinosuke Abe is back behind the plate, that does open up a spot at first base if someone gets injured and they need a veteran who can play the spot. But him at first base, I don't know. I don't like that situation at all. So I'm not sure what kind of pickup that is. But he's a body who can fill in, right? Toru Hosokawa, the catcher, a longtime catcher with the Cebu Lions, who's now he's just making the rounds to each team in the Pacific League. And now he's ended up with the Lotte Marines this year. So I don't know, he's 39, he's a career 203 batter, and they have catchers, and they have a lot more, they have guys who seem like they're a lot more useful than he is, so maybe they're gonna transition him into the coaching box at some point. I think he'd be more useful in the first base coaching box than he would be behind the plate. But he can catch, and we do know that some of these catchers, and I've joked about it, they're hard to kill. They don't go away. They can last a long time in Japan. So defensively, I guess he can still throw. So he provides a good game. He provides good defense, can call good games. But I don't really think that there's an upgrade anywhere. He's just bringing some experience to the team. Then you've got Yoshihisa Naruse, who signed with Oryx. That, I think, is, I don't know, to me it looks useless. We shall see. But he didn't do anything with the Yakult Swallows last year, and this is after he was, you know, very useful with the Marines in his career there, in his time there. So we'll see how that works out. There was a trade that took place in the offseason. Was Hirotoshi Takanashi of the Fighters was traded to the Swallows, basically for Ryo Akiyoshi. And two other guys were in the deal, but I think these are the principals involved. And I can see this working out for the Swallows in that they have a guy who has some experience coming out of the bullpen, also can start, and going from the Pacific League to the Central League, you would think he can do a little bit more. So we'll see how that works out for them. And they picked up Akiyoshi, who's really got nasty stuff, but just hasn't been able to put it together consistently and get the outs for the Swallows. So we'll see what he is in that Fighters bullpen. But I think for me and for Jim, it was the same. The obvious choice is Yoshihiro Maru joining the Giants. Two-time defending Central League MVP. He's a quality hitter. Jim looked up his stats. I remember him doing really well at Tokyo Dome, but his career stats and, I don't know, 300-something at-bats, 60-some-odd at-bats, was 266 or 267, somewhere around there. So not outstanding, not bad, but he's a strong defensive player, and I expect him to do that well. He gets on base. I expect him to do that well. He's probably the guy. I think Hisashi Iwakuma, he's just a wild card. If he's healthy, I have no doubt that he'll be successful, because he was an elite pitcher in Japan, and I still think he can be really good. But injuries have really, really hindered his production the past two seasons in the States, and he ends up here in Japan. I know already he's not going to be ready or available for opening day because of some situation. I don't remember what it was, but that's something that obviously Iwakuma, a healthy Iwakuma versus an injured Iwakuma, and a guy who goes out there maybe with something not not quite right, but he's available to pitch, still isn't good as good as a healthy one. And that's obvious, but if he can get healthy and get these ailments behind him and be fairly productive, I expect him to win a bunch of games for the Giants, because I think they're going to be good in that respect. And especially if he can keep the runs off the board, I think they're going to be able to score runs. They look like they're going to be able to have some pop in their lineup, guys who get on, and they're going to play good enough defense. So that should be a good watch there. But yeah, pointless. There are too many pointless ones to name. I think I said it before, when Chono went to the Carp, I didn't really see a spot for him. But I think they're really going to look at him seriously, try to give him a spot, try to give him some at-bats. He's another guy. He's 34. It's not like he's young, but he's not too old. And he can still do certain things. But they have some players there. And, I think he's really going to have to prove himself to get some, to earn those spots and to earn those at-bats. Otherwise, a lot of times we see these guys hang on in their careers as pinch hitters, and he can certainly do that and hang around and be effective. And he didn't change leagues. He's in the same league, so he might have some production with them. So I wouldn't, I'm not going to say bad things about it. I don't think it's a great pickup, obviously. If it were a trade, I would understand. But as Jim pointed out in our first recording, they paid nothing. They gave up nothing. It was nothing. He came to them free. He dropped into their laps, and he's if he's a little bit, if he's average, that's better than that's good enough. That's good enough to get them something. They got him for nothing. So that's hopefully a positive for them. But we'll see. They're certainly with Maru gone, they're going to have to be able to make up some of the production that they've lost with him. So perhaps Chono can win them a few games here and there. All right, so we won't be around next week. This is a short one, as opposed to the one where Jim is talking.
Hashtag high heat.
But we will be back in 2 weeks, and we'll have a prediction show, either the Central League or the Pacific League. We are trying to get the cast of characters together and arrange that, so I can't tell you at the moment which one we're going to be doing first. But from the looks of it, we'll be having that one in 2 weeks. And then for the weekend of the 23rd, we'll have the following league. And then opening day is on March 29th. We'll get started. We'll be weekly after. Well, we'll be weekly starting with the 16th, the March 16th show. So we'll be coming out every week then. And hopefully there are no more injuries. I know Tanaka got injured. He twisted that ankle for Rakuten the other day. So hopefully no more injuries. Everybody comes into the season nice and healthy. And we start things on a great note and have a great opening day, which I saw in the States. People want to make that a national holiday stateside. I think it should be a national holiday worldwide. Don't think so small, people. Think global at local. It should be a national holiday, our international holiday, and we should always capitalize opening day. It's that important to economies, it's that important to people, and it's that important to fans. And with that, we will get to our other question from Michael Westbay. We'll get to that next time when Jim is on the show. Anyone else who has a question, and thank you very much to Glenn, as always, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions by email, including your MP3s with a little 1 minute voice question, to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. Or you can go to the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. We will talk to you in 2 weeks. Enjoy your baseball.